Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this installment of Sidelines with Nance Wernis. This is Nance Wernis of the two-time champion Kansas City Storm on WFB Talk Continues. Tonight's topic is more on the structure of the leagues and how it has crippled the growth of women's football. Last week we kind of beat up on the IWFL and the WFA, as those are the more traditional leagues with one or more independent people running them. That model is where the league collects money and then provides services to the teams. Today, I want to talk about another model, and that is the model of a team-controlled or a team-run league. The WPFL followed this model, and while it was in existence, and there is currently a league in existence, the WSFL, that is trying to do that, be an owner-controlled or team-controlled league. It's been in existence for about a year now. When that league was getting started, Randall Fields had contacted me, and I talked to him several times about his concept. And initially, it had nothing to do with being owner-controlled. It had to do with pairing men's and women's teams together to work together during a season and leverage practice facilities and game facilities and so forth. And, of course, hopefully other ideas and knowledge about the game. And so that was his concept, and that was going to make his league different than the others. And we were kind of going along those lines. He had a men's team, and he was affiliated with a league, and that league had kind of embraced the women's league that he was bringing up. And we were looking at that model and looking at men's teams in my area that I could couple with that were in that league. And as football goes, there was some drama, and he had some issues with his men's team and ended up losing that relationship with that league and many of his players, and he had to stand up another team in a different league. And so we have kind of lost the ability to do the men's and women's together model. And so we kind of sat back when that happened, and we thought, and I was thinking, what would make the league different than the others? Because it's every year another league starts up, it seems like, and wanted to be something different. And that's when the concept of the owner-controlled league came about. I talked to some other owners, you know, Dion out in Las Vegas, he's a good soundboard for this sort of thing. And I just asked, you know, what's important? What do they want? What are we not getting with the leagues that are out there today? And that was something that he hit on. They wanted more transparency. They wanted to know more. And initially, Randall and I talked about an owner-owned league, and with the stock and stuff, that got really complicated quick. So it made a lot more sense to leverage the infrastructure he had in place, bring up a new women's league, but have it be owner-controlled. And so I don't have a lot of insight as to how the WPFL operated when it was in existence, but I do know with the WSFL, they came up under that model under a partnership agreement. Not the owners of the league were not in the business, but there was a partnership in place that this entity kind of fit under legally. So anyway, that was how the concept was applied to the WSFL, and it's been going for about a year now, and we need to pick on it a little bit here, as there's some glaring examples that they've struggled with that are good examples of how leagues themselves are their own worst enemies to growing women's football. One of the things I wanted to point out is that the owner-controlled league has a lot of advantages, but it also has a lot of responsibilities. And so if the owners aren't willing to step up and take on some responsibilities, then things aren't going to get done, and it isn't going to work. That Randall does a lot of work with the league and puts in a lot of time, but there's a lot of things that haven't gotten done over the last year, and it's because of lack of organization, lack of being able to execute on that. And it's also the lack of involvement by the owners. Incredibly, the WSFL suffers from lack of involvement in the owner-controlled league, which is exactly why it was created, was to allow the involvement. And so you would think if the owners and the teams that wanted that involvement chose the WSFL, they would then take advantage of that opportunity. And that really has had very limited exploitation, if you will. The owners are not exploiting that opportunity to be involved and to participate as much as you would think they would, considering that's the whole premise of the league. To give you an example, we were in the conference call that we did for the yearly owners meeting just on Saturday. And there was a task that came up to be done. It was basically, we were trying to come up with our organizational structure, and we have had some positions outlined and understood, and the people were doing them, but not very many, and there was nothing formal written down. And so that was suggested that we do a listing of the positions that we wanted in our organization, and a little bit about their roles and responsibilities. This is a very basic document for organization. You know, typically, this is created very early in the history. The WSFL did not do that. We did not have such a document describing the organization and the roles. We, like I said, we had a few people that are doing certain things, but nothing formal. And so the good news was the owners realized we needed that, and we wanted to work on that. And they immediately tasked the commissioner, Randall, with doing it. And he took the assignment. And I was very concerned about that, because we had seen a lot very recently, as this league has grown, of things not getting done, getting dropped on the floor, getting pushed out because too much was landing on the commissioner to do, and it wasn't getting done. So I kind of stopped the meeting right then, and I said, wait a second, Randall doesn't have to do everything. Can we have somebody volunteer to do this and bring it back to us? And it was just silent on the end of the phone, and I was very disappointed and appalled. And so I said, okay, well, I guess that's Randall's, and you know, off it went. The ironic thing was, the reason I kind of picked that task to make that point with is that I actually had done that work. I had done some bylaws work in preparation for the owners meeting, and I had included a proposed organizational structure into that document. So had anybody stepped up and shown any initiative to own that, I would have given them what I had. They would have had, you know, maybe they would have liked what I've gotten, and they would have been 100% done or 80% done. I'm not sure, but there was already work that was done, but nobody stepped up. And again, it fell onto the commissioner. So that will absolutely stunt the growth of women's football if the owners aren't willing to step up and take responsibility, you know, get organized. To give you another example, I keep hitting on organizing and being able to organize and execute. The WSFL has passed many, many laws for their bylaws, many rules. We have calls every week, and there's oftentimes a discussion and a motion and a vote. Randall had asked me to look at the bylaws for the meeting coming up and propose some new ones part of what I did also was just incorporate some things that we had in practice began doing, but it wasn't formally recognized in our bylaws. In any event, I asked him to give me a list of what we had already approved, what was already voted on, what were the current bylaws in place, and that list didn't exist. No one had been keeping track. No one had been tasked with writing these down. So for a year, we have been voting on things and adopting things, and we don't know what those are. And we don't have a list of those. It's the same way with the game rules. We had a new owner join the call a couple weeks ago, and she asked for the rules. Could you send me the rules? Well, we don't have those. And these are very basic documents, block and tackle kind of, no pun intended, documents that every league should have early in their existence. And we're sitting here a year later, the WSL, without these very, very basic, common, required type documents. And so I think I don't know if we underestimated the organization needed or the number of people needed to pull that off, but for whatever reason, you have a league here that's postured to really help the sport grow, and it's struggling with just the very simple things to operate as a entity. And so I think that this lesson here is, it is, perhaps it's more difficult than it appears, or we're not committed enough to the right things. I've noticed that too. It's a lot easier to do the small tasks and the easy things, deciding what kind of ball you want to use, et cetera, and voting on a lot of the maybe non-controversial things, and it's harder to tackle the bylaws, the organizational structure, the budget, anything that might be controversial or that might have some girth to it. But it needs to be done, and that's the foundation. And the foundation isn't under the WSFL right now. There's a lot of things in people's minds, and there's a lot of understood practices, but there isn't any infrastructure underneath the house of cards may tumble unless that gets built up very, very quickly. And so we're doing a disservice to women's football if we don't recognize the importance of those things and to address those and get on solid footing very, very quickly. I have spent about 3 weeks trying to put together some of the bylaws that I think we've kind of been working under over the last year, and it was incredible to me. Even the bylaws that we thought we had understood and we thought we had voted on and we were working with, the difference understanding when you went to try to actually nail down the wording to explain what the ruling was, and how easy that was to have confusion. The last week before the owners meeting was a very tough one because we were trying to get things done. There was a lot to be done in preparation for the meeting, and it wasn't getting done. And I knew we were going to be cut short. It's a lot of pressure to get where we wanted to be. And I know we had a meeting right before on the Sunday before the Saturday, and we were trying to do the budget. And the budget was, there was some line items that had been sent out. They didn't total correctly. There was no revenue side to the equation. They had a lot of expenses. There was no revenue plan in place. And we struggled for a long time prior to the meeting so we'd have something to vote on at the meeting. And we never could come up with even the standard format, an appropriate format, whether or not you include the revenue side of your budget in this budget. And so that lack of even understanding what we needed to do, I think has really slowed the effectiveness of the WSFL, and then ultimately, how it's going to serve the women's football until it gets mature. And get some of these things done. It has to get things written down and have those things in place. Anyway, another thing that I wanted to discuss, and I'm kind of picking on the WSFL now because I kind of have a good example here, is the things that can happen that will keep the leagues are doing that could keep women's football from growing is just that: not being organized, not executing, not taking things seriously, not being involved as owners. You know, like I've seen this all now, and it's really come to head in the last week as we tried to get through the owners' meeting and really failed. You know, we did some work last Saturday and spent a couple hours and got frustrated and got off topic. We started talking about things that weren't on the agenda, skipping around on the agenda, skipping things all together on the agenda, and then in the end we just, you know, gave up after about a couple of hours. So it was a really, really tough meeting. But one thing that we did accomplish, I think most people would agree, again, was the budget. And if you guys are aware, the WSFL is going to be putting on a championship weekend in a small town in Iowa, college town in Iowa, and they just approved the expense to rent a dome stadium for their championship weekend. That has an expense of about $10,000, and there's some other expenses with that weekend, rings and awards and, of course, the referees and so forth to put on that weekend. But it totaled about $21,000 out of that budget, out of a budget of about $24,000. So about 80% of the currently approved WSFL budget is going toward this championship weekend. And I thought a lot about that after the aborted owners meeting that we had. Is what were we really thinking when we did that? And I come back to this topic: where are we doing the right things to grow the sport? you know, a dome stadium, you know, would be really great in January and February, especially up in Iowa. I believe that's in northern Iowa. But is it really necessary in August? Is that the best way to spend the resources of the league and in women's football? I thought about that. Why would you just not hold the championship game up north in a cooler environment, Michigan or Minnesota or someplace where typically in July or August when that game is played, it would be cooler there? So I often wonder why the IWFL goes to Texas to play their game, championship game, in August. But I do know that Kez and Lori don't want to make a trip. They don't have to travel that way. But I think it would make a lot more sense just to move the games up north when it gets cold or when it gets hot, where it's colder, in Michigan or Minnesota. That would make more sense when you're trying to finish out our seasons in August. The WSFL has chosen to rent a dome stadium for the comfort of the players and the fans, and that will be great. And they're paying a lot of money for that, and it's in a kind of a remote location. And I'm not sure that they are really thinking about the players when they did this. You know, certainly it will be easier for them to play in an air-conditioned, climate-controlled environment. But from an expense standpoint and from the standpoint of the location, I'm not sure that is going to be the best logistics for the players involved on that weekend. And I can't help but to wonder if the renting of a large dome stadium like that and some of the other things, the championship rings and so forth that were voted in, had a lot more to do with Randall's choice to, when he started his league, he obviously had some issues with Jeff King, and you know, now he's got his own league, and it seems like there's a kind of a one-upmanship that is underway here. And when we were looking at the rings, he always kept comparing them to what the other leagues were doing, and ours were going to be better, and the stadium was going to be better. And all that's nice if you're doing it for the right reason, but my fear was we lost track of the players in our zest to one-up the WFA or the Jeff King. And I was going through with the owners when we were discussing this. I said, how many people do we need this big stadium? How many people do you think are going to come? And the owners acknowledged that not very many people will be there. Typically, the championship games aren't well attended. It's difficult for people to get there, and it will be very difficult or more difficult in the location that this dome is. It's Cedar Falls, Iowa, I believe is what it's called. It's a college town there. But the owners agreed that they don't expect a lot of people to come there, but they think if they have it there, then we'll get more teams. The teams will see that, and they'll come to this league, and that will be a neat thing. And I was reflected on this after the call on Saturday with the budgets, and I think that the WSFL has really forgotten the player in this. With 80% of the budget, you know, $21,000 being allocated to this weekend, that appears to be a lot more about a show for the other leagues and the other teams than it does about the players. And the fact that the owners were interested in getting existing teams to over to this league versus growing new teams in new areas was interesting to me. And it was concerning. I hope that sometimes you do the right thing for the wrong reasons, and it all works out. And I hope that the WSFL is focusing on the players and not their own egos. and they're trying to be not necessarily the largest league, but they're trying to be the best league. And very concerned about the loss the side of the players, specifically because I wasn't really ready for that jump in expenses. And so I've had to go back to my players. And one of the gals, when I told her what the budget number was for the league fees, she was astounded. She goes, "Oh, that's 22 car washes." And I had to laugh, but you know, that's the perceptive or the perspective that the players have. It's easy for the owners to vote for these things and say, "Yeah, we'll do it." Then we go back and look at our fundraising goals and so forth, and those poor women that are kind of on the hook for this. And again, I hope we've done the right thing for the right reasons, or at least I hope it turns out okay, and that the players are able to fundraise and get that thing covered, and that they enjoy it. I hope they can get up there and enjoy it, because it's quite an investment. And actually, it's not an investment. It's more of an expense. And you talk about decisions that leagues make, and are they doing the wrong thing to grow women's football? You know, you wonder if all that money on one weekend, that expense, is a good use of money, or is it better to use some money in an asset that might be able to be used year after year? I don't know. I think that the comment here is, you know, the leagues do a lot of things that sometimes I think stunt the growth of women's football. And if you start a league or an operating league or involved with a league, and you're not doing 100% of the things you need to do to make that successful around the organization and around the execution and getting involved with it, I think you're shortchanging the women involved and the women that you serve. And if you're making decisions, budget-wise or otherwise, that are motivated by anything other than making it right for the players, making things better for the players. If there's any motivation around money's being spent or energy or whatever that isn't focused on the player, I think you need to look twice at that. And I think that all leagues are probably guilty of that. And perhaps there's an example here that I've run into here in the last week that is somewhat concerning and had caused my reflection. And so I put that out for everyone to stop and think as we're developing our budgets this year and as we're recruiting new players and laying our plans for the year. Are we really doing the right things for the right reasons, or have we wandered and are off track? And I challenge you to get back on track if that's the case. So those are my thoughts around how the structure of leagues and so forth can sometimes cripple the growth of women's football, even with the best intentions. And I wanted to leave, before I leave you, I wanted to refer to a quote that I heard on SportsCenter just this week. It was pretty funny, and I just wanted to pass it on. They were showing a clip about Denver's defense, and they was giving up a long run. And the announcer said, "The Broncos are taking this helmet-to-helmet thing very seriously. They aren't hitting at all." I thought that was very funny. So I leave you with that. I want to thank you for listening to Sidelines with Nance Wernis. This is Nance Wernis of the two-time champion Kansas City Storm on WFB Talk Continues. Join us next week as we talk about how the players are adversely affecting the growth of women's football and pointing out some items there and maybe giving them some things that they can work on as we try to grow our sport and further our cause. Thank you for joining me.